Good afternoon, brethren. I wanted to thank Dr. Hoover. I'd called him this morning and asked him if there was going to be special music, and he said yes. He said it'll be Canzone Senza Parole, or Lied ohne Wörter, by Davide Aspilapolvere, or Gottlieb Staubsauger. And I don't know any Italian, but the Staubsauger, I said, Staubsauger. That's some kind of a sucker. And he said, that's my name in Italian and German. Staubsauger means vacuum. I thought that was pretty good. No, I think it's very nice. I always appreciate when we get to do something as a family, and I think the Hoovers are especially blessed that they're so gifted. And we're so blessed that we get to listen to them, but to have a family to play these beautiful instruments together and make such beautiful music together. And he also composed this. I mean, we are blessed people. We really are. I don't think many churches could say as much. Isn't this a wonderful time of year? In fact, a man named Andy said just the other day, it's the most wonderful time of the year. Those of you over 40 will understand that. It's a song. It's a song. I want to tell you a story. Yesterday, I had made a presentation. I had to go to Palm Springs for a couple of days, and this time of year, it's beautiful. As many of you know, it's hotter than a brick in the summer, and I have to go out there as well. But when it comes to the fall, winter, and spring in the desert, in the Coachella Valley, they call it, it truly is beautiful. There's snow on the hills. The air is beautifully clear, and it's always a pleasure. They told me I'd do a presentation to a group of people. It'd be 15. So when I got there, there were 70, and they were all ladies. And, you know, I got to tell you, women just seem to have more fun than men do. It was a big celebration before, and I was going to speak to them on a certain aspect of their jobs. And I don't know, whenever I see these ladies just had a lot of fun. It was, you know, a holiday kind of celebration for them. And I always see when men have fun in the commercials, they usually have to be drinking or something to have fun. But women just seem to be naturally happy. And these ladies were. There were decorations everywhere. There were little cutout Christmas trees everywhere. There's one on my laptop. They put one on my projector. They put one on my books and my notes. They were everywhere. And I very carefully removed them. And everything went fine. The presentation went fine. Afterwards, I had, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Now, I was not offended. I'm old enough to have heard it a couple thousand times, and when I was younger, I celebrated for 20-plus years, so I said it. Said Merry Christmas. How many of you in your old pagan days said Merry Christmas? Come on. Yeah, all right. Yeah, see, quite a few of you. I'm not offended. I understand. But what do you say? This time of year is always very difficult, yeah? People don't come up to you and say, Happy Easter, do they? Not very often, anyway. But they do say Merry Christmas, or in England, Happy Christmas. So how do you respond? These are some of the things I just wanted to share with you after my many, many years of being both a pagan, and I'm glad after the first message, I'm now justified and righteous. I know what to say. Or you could say, when they say Merry Christmas, Bah humbug. My father loved that. He said it quite regularly, celebrated Christmas, but he still said Bah humbug. You could also, when they say Merry Christmas, you could, no, that's a pagan holiday. Would you like a booklet? You could say, after they say Merry Christmas, no, you are confused and under Satan's domination and conditioning. Would you like a booklet? I don't know. You know what I tell them? I have two standard answers depending on who I talk to. They say Merry Christmas to you. I say thank you very much, but I'm not Catholic. But thank you anyway. Because it is, after all, it is a Catholic holiday. Yeah? Ask any Catholic. You could say, you know, this is a Catholic holiday, and the Roman Catholic Church feels that by you serving under that day that the Protestants do acknowledge the Mother Holy Roman Church's dominance and influence over you daughter churches in rebellion. Or you could say, my favorite is, after they say Merry Christmas to you, I say, Happy Hanukkah. What do you think they say? I don't celebrate Hanukkah. I say, that's okay. I don't celebrate Christmas either. And they usually smile. They toddle off. They think I'm Jewish. You know, who knows? And then I hand them a booklet. Very good. Very good. We don't mean to offend this time of year, yeah? I asked Becky, I said, why don't we just get into the spirit a little bit? She said, what? I said, I didn't say by a great big tree. How about a little tree? By a little tree. She said, no. But I don't mean to offend anybody. I know you don't either, but it gets a little awkward, and we don't mean to upset people and cause offense, do we? We especially don't want to cause offense to people of our own faith, do we? That would be even worse, wouldn't it? Should be. I want you to, if you would, turn with me to a very, very interesting chapter. I've referenced it before, and it's in my favorite book of the Bible, all hands down, to Matthew chapter 18. Matthew 18, I think, is, if I may say, can I say brother to brother? Can I say sister, brother to sister? I think it is probably one of the most misunderstood, yet most quoted, yet most not followed, set of some of the most important scriptures that we will ever read. So in Matthew 18, you know where I'm going. It's chapter 18, verse 15. Moreover, if your brother sins against you, you'll go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. But if you will not hear, he will not hear. Take with you one or two more, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. If he refuses to hear them, tell them to the church. But if he refuses to even hear the church, let him be to you like a heathen and a tax collector. You've all heard it. You've all read it. And I think I've even spoken on it before. But I'd like to look at it in its completeness. These steps are very, very clear. Your brother offends you. You go to your brother. If he hears you, wonderful. If he doesn't, you bring witnesses. If he doesn't, you go to the church. Real simple. It's almost like a mathematical formula, yeah? Step one, step two, step three. It's not so simple. Many believe this is the most flagrantly violated verse in the entire church. Ministers will hear, and I know all the elders have, so-and-so has hurt me in both word and deed. I usually try and respond in my typical caring way. So what did so-and-so say when you confronted them? The response is usually, I'm not going to them, they're crazy. Or, I'm not going to them, that's your job. Yeah. I'm not going to them, they, dot, dot, dot. Bottom line, I'm not going to them. You're going to take care of it. Then I tell them, I cannot. Not until you've gone to that person. And then you can tell me. In rare cases, let us be very, very clear, in rare cases where there are physical or mental abuse or threats of violence, Matthew 18:15 does not apply. And to make it apply is ridiculous. We're talking about some person to person. And in that case, you might want to seek out the services of Helgi and Darden, if it's that serious. In my experience of almost 30 years, it has rarely, if ever, been that way. Most of the time, as serious as it may be, it does not rise to the level of physical or mental threats. But many times what happens, brethren, is the steps are skipped. Easy to say. The skips are stepped. You know, in chemistry, you skip steps. You get bad results. You can kill people. Get bad product. Your results are crazy. You don't know what happened. You have no guidance. You've got to follow the steps. The steps are critical. They're called formulas. This is a formula. The problem with the formula here is taken out of context, and it can't be taken out of context. And today, what I'd like to do is discuss with you the true context of Matthew 18. Why a critical series of very important verses, all of them, by the way, you've read and heard. They're world famous, these verses, in Matthew 18. They seemingly are unrelated, but they've been placed together by Matthew, the writer, with God's Spirit for a very definitive reason. We're going to explore that reason. We're going to try and attempt to understand just exactly what did Jesus mean in this very important chapter. So let's begin, not with Matthew 18:15, where we should not begin, and it is wrong to do so because it takes it completely out of context We're going to begin in Matthew 18, 1. Now remember, in the original Greek manuscripts, which was in the Bible study, there were no chapters, there were no verses. It was a series of either uncial or minuscule Greek. Yeah, uncial means the big letters of Greek, all run together. Try it sometime. Try writing a sentence without the spaces between the words. It's not that hard to read. But that's what the manuscripts had, and there was no break chapter 18, break chapter 19, break chapter 20, or individual verses. They was just run on. So we're going to pick chapter 18, verse 1 in our Bibles, because it's as good a place to start as any. And in fact, I think in many cases, these chapters seem to be very inspired by extension. There's nothing holy about them. I think they're very important. So in chapter 18, verse 1, at that time the disciples came to Jesus saying, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Verse 2, then Jesus called a little child to him and set him in the midst of them and said, "Assuredly I say to you, truly I say to you, unless you are converted and become as little children, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself as this little child is the greatest in the kingdom. Whoever receives one little child like this in my name receives me." This is very simple. Gentle, sweet children. We had an occasion to be with the Salyers, and they've got this beautiful little girl. I'm telling you, you should see, when a man has a son, he acts one way. When he has a daughter, it's very, very different. And there's nothing sweeter and more helpless, soft. I mean, I held her, and she's a beautiful little baby. Jesus uses this, and you should look at a child this way, of what we should be. This is the image he's trying to convey. That's why we do the blessing of the little children. We don't do the blessing of adults. We do the blessing of little children. They're so innocent. We ask for protection on the little children. They're so humble. So this is the example, the image that he's trying to convey. He goes on in verse 6. He says, "Whoever causes one of these little ones," speaking of whom? The child. I believe Jesus still had the child there. He may have pointed to them with his hand. He said, "Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe to the world because of offenses. For offenses do come. Offenses do come." There's no one in this room that has not been offended. I don't care what age you are. I don't care where you live, whether you're married or unmarried, man or a woman. Short or tall, you've been offended. Some of you deeply. Some of you very deeply. "Offenses will come, but woe to that man by whom the offense comes." The word offense there is the word, you're going to get some Greek today. The word is scandalon. It is a scandalous event, this offense. It's a bad thing to offend someone. Jesus said, offenses are going to come. Woe to the person from whom the offenses emanate, and woe to them if this is a little child of his that is offended. He's very, very serious. This is all red letter. It just continues and continues for close to 20 verses until we get to verse 21, which is an interesting verse 7 by itself. He says, verse 8, "If your hand or foot causes you to sin, cut it off. Cast it from you. It is better for you to enter into life lame or maimed rather than having two hands or two feet to be cast into Gehenna, into everlasting fire. And if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. It is better for you to enter into life with one eye rather than having two eyes to be cast into Gehenna or hell fire." Now, you can take this two ways. There are people, and there are commentators, who I believe have a definitive Catholic bent. They see in this one thing and one thing only. And I've got a commentary that believes this. This is church authority. The offending party is to be excommunicato. Yeah? Doesn't that sound Catholic? Yeah? It's got a ring to it, doesn't it? Excommunicato. Yeah? Off with their head. Get rid of them. I have another idea. And that's what it may mean. How about if it applies to you? How about if it applies to me? How about if we take it internally? Because I think Jesus is using some very interesting personal pronouns. He's not using the plural. He doesn't say, if you. Remember who he's speaking to. Who is he speaking to? It says, at that time, the apostles, no, they were not apostles. They were disciples. So he's not talking to the church the ecclesiastical authority of the church. He's talking to these people, these men who are his disciples, the learning ones. I think he means more so, moreover, to take it very personally. Personally. He says, indeed, if you have something that is offending people over and over again, get rid of it. An attitude, a feeling, an action. It has to be stopped. If we take it any other way, running around with one hand is a traumatic event. We sometimes will get an image of an Islamic law, of Sharia law, where they, what happens when you steal? Yeah. They cut off your hand. You offend with a member, they cut it off. Right? When you speak evil, what do? They cut your tongue out. That tells everybody for the rest of their natural life, they were a horrible offender. I'd like you to think of it as something internal. Because Jesus has a theme throughout this entire chapter he's trying to get across. And I think hopefully you'll agree, it is overwhelming what he's trying to say here. So he's saying, if your eye casts you to sin, you pluck it out. It is metaphor. I'll be honest with you, of the two ideas, one church ecclesiastical authority and putting people out, are you taking care of the problem that you've got? What do you think is harder and more difficult? The latter. It is better to go on in life missing this because these offenses will occur. Verse 10, he continues, take heed that you do not despise one of these little ones. Here it comes again. Who are the little ones? He's repeated it in every section. Do not despise one of these little ones, for I say to you that in heaven, their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven. Now, why would he say something like that? Now, again, maybe I watch too many movies. I don't know, or I've got an overactive imagination. I try and picture what was he, sitting there again, you know, like this on a rock, just mentioning, saying, take heed that you do not despise one of these little ones. For I say to you, in heaven, their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven. I don't think so. I think this was a borderline threat. This was to be taken with heed. Take heed that you do not despise one of these little ones, these children that believe in me. Because I'll tell you right now, God's angels are watching over them. Yeah? God will protect them. So don't offend these. For he says in verse 11, most manuscripts have this, not all. Verse 11, for the Son of Man has come to save that which was lost. This is an interesting verse because it is a transition verse to what follows. One of the most famous set of verses in all the Bible. Verse 12, what do you think? What do you think? If a man has 100 sheep and one of them goes astray, does he not leave the 99 and go to the mountains to seek the one that is straying or missing or is gone or is what? Offended? And if he should find it, assuredly, I say to you, he rejoices over that one sheep than over the 99 that did not go astray. Even so, it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one of these, key phrase, little ones should perish. Now, we could be talking about many things. You may think that we're talking about the church. If so, who's the shepherd? Jesus. He doesn't want any of them to go astray. He doesn't want any of them to perish. He doesn't want any of them lost. For it says in the preceding verse, for the Son of Man has come to save that which was lost, that has strayed, that has been what? Offended. That's how the whole chapter started. And it's a continuous series of what we call pericopes or individual stories that have been put together by the author for a very definitive reason. So he says, to end it, even so, it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one, in other words, anyone of these little ones should perish. And now we come to the meat and the potatoes. Right? This is the one you want to get to, right? Because we want this taken care of. I'm offended. And I want to have, we heard it the first part, I want to be what? Justified. So we go to 18:15. Moreover, because of all that was said before, moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him your fault between you and him alone. You and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. But if he will not, he will not hear, take with you one or two more, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he refuses to hear them, tell it to the church. But if he refuses even to hear the church, let him be to you like a heathen and an IRS agent. Sorry, tax collector. Sorry. We have a few in the audience, and they know I love them, except around April 15th. What is going on here? Let me ask you a question. We just read this. You've all read it. You've all read it. Possibly you've read it when you thought you needed it. What's it say to do? Let me ask you, who is the offender in this? Let's look at the participants. Who is the offender? The person who has sinned against you. Notice the phrase, moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him. Go and tell him his fault. He's obviously clueless. You need to go tell him. So he's the offender. Who is the offended party? Who's the other participant? Moi. Me. I'm the offended party. You. All of us have been offended. Repeatedly. Repeatedly we've been offended. What does he say about the offended party? What are they supposed to be? Reference verses 1 through 14. As little sheep, lambs, children, little ones, innocent, humble. The sheep are like children. They're to be restored, reconciled. But they have an obligation of and by themselves to the others. It says, if he will not hear, call another witness. Then go to the church. This is a severe issue. In my mind, this is very severe. This is high crimes. This is a great offense if the person won't hear you. It's very severe. But let me tell you what it doesn't say. It doesn't say to put anybody out. Not one word. By the way, the word church is only mentioned in the latter part. The first parts of the verses are person to person, brother to brother, sister to sister, sister to brother, brother to sister. And then sisters or brothers to another. Church isn't even mentioned. The church isn't even involved until later. And I think the church they're talking about is far, far different than what we have today. But be that as it may, let me tell you what it doesn't say. It doesn't say to put anybody out. Sure doesn't say, pick up the phone and call the elder. Okay? It doesn't say, pick up the phone and call the pastor. It doesn't say, call five people that have nothing to do with the incident. It doesn't say send 15 emails with subtle hints so that everybody will say, what was that email about? I'm concerned. Oh, nothing. Nothing. How much time do you have? That's what it doesn't say. It says to go to your brother between you and he with 12 people. No. No. With 12 people that are bigger than he is. No. It says you and he alone. You and she alone, alone, together as brothers. What is the point here? It says right there, it's very easy. It says, if he hears you, you have gained your brother. Now, is that the objective? Yes. It's to restore the one who has strayed. It's to bring back together. It's to reconcile. That's what he's been trying to pound home, verse after verse, story after story. To forgive. If he hears you, you've gained your brother, and that is the purpose. He says, 18, we love this verse, don't we? I love this. This sounds Catholic too, doesn't it? If it can be taken the wrong way. Assuredly, I say to you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Yeah? Again, I say to you that if two or three on earth agree concerning anything that they ask, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered together in my name, I am there in the midst of them. You can't take the verses out of context. You can't do it. They belong together. Why do we have brethren with brethren? To restore, to bring back together that which was apart, those that have gone astray. But there's more. He says, I'm in the midst of them during this process of reconciliation. But there's more. Of all that has been said here, Jesus has been trying to, from four or five different sessions, he's tried to convey an idea. He starts with little children, innocence, humble attitudes. He's talked again about sheep and them going astray. Then he talks about, moreover, if your brother, verse 15, sins against you. If your brother, I want to say this again, it's very, very important. If your brother or sister sins against you, another brother, go and tell him his fault. Peter, the disciple, being as usual, quick on the uptake, full of wisdom, says, then Peter came to him and said, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I have to forgive him? How often? Isn't that great? How many times should I have to forgive this moron? This blockhead that keeps offending me over and over and over again. I'm constantly offended. Yeah? How many times? Seven times? Right? By the way, guess what seven times refers to? The oral law. You must forgive your brother seven times. Notice how he turns it around. Moreover, connection is very important here. The words are identical. Moreover, if your brother sins against you, stop there. Now read Peter. Peter said to him, how often shall my brother sin against me? Right? We call that concordance. They're together. There's parallel. And I forgive him. I got to get away out of this. I got to get away out of this because I'm offended and I want justification. How many? Eighth time I can go to court? Eighth time? Ninth time I can go take witnesses? Tenth time I can go tell the church? Yeah? Write a letter? Scatter it around? How many times am I able to do this? Seven times? Then I'm free? Yeah? First thing out of Peter's mouth. Verse 22, Jesus said to him, verse 22, I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven. What he uses is called a minimus and maximus. It's called going from one extreme to the other. Jesus uses this and employs this idea constantly. He uses extremes to put forward a point. If he says, no, not seven times, 490 times, what does that mean? That means forever. Forever without end. I've been offended. If you've got an hour, I'll tell you about all the offenses that have been put upon me. I've been offended by people over and over again by the same person. Yeah. Over and over and over again by the same person. How many times am I supposed to forgive them? Over and over and over and over again without end. Now, I can only imagine how Peter responded to Jesus at this point, right? Peter's saying, oh, I get it. I understand. No, it took over and over again for the disciples to get it. And so Jesus, in verse 23, begins a parable. There's no break after he says, you must forgive 70 times 7. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with the servants. When he had begun to settle accounts, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. Now, most of you will have a side margin reference about what 10,000 talents is. I've checked it, triple checked it, and the best explanation is it is an astronomical amount of money. It is equivalent to 60 million days of work at that time. 10,000 talents. It is huge. It's the lottery 50 times over. Astronomical amount of money. I want you to think what you get paid in a day, whoever you are, whatever you do, right, per day, right, on your best day, plus overtime, 60 million days. That's the size of money, the amount of money this man owed. He wants to settle accounts. And one who owed him 10,000 talents. But he was not able to pay. No kidding. His master commanded that he be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and that payment be made. The servant therefore fell down before him, saying, Master, have patience with me, and I will pay you all. Then the master of the servant was moved with compassion, released him, and forgave him the debt. But that servant went out and found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. One day's pay. One day's wages. And he laid hands on him. He took him by the throat, saying, Pay me what you owe. So his fellow servant fell down at his feet and begged him, saying, Have patience with me. Sound familiar? Does this sound familiar at all? We just read it, but it was being said by someone else. He says, Have patience with me, and I will pay you all. But the man would not, and went and threw him into prison till he should pay the debt. Now, first of all, this guy's not too bright. When somebody owes you money, you put him into prison. How are you going to pay it back? You're in prison. He put him into prison until he should pay the debt. Verse 31, so when his fellow servants saw what had been done, they were grieved, very grieved, and came and told their master all that had been done. Then his master, after he had called him, said to him, You wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you begged me. Should you not also have compassion on your fellow servant, just as I had pity on you? And his master was wroth, angry, and delivered him to the torturers, not prison, the torturers, until he should pay all that was due him. I don't think he expected him to be paid, but he sent him to the torturers. Verse 35, and it's in red, which means, guess who spoke it? So my heavenly Father will also do to each of us from his heart if he does not forgive his brother his trespasses. The whole chapter, brethren, talks about Christ and his expectation, what he demands from the people who are called by his name. He expects us, whether we are like a little baby or not, he expects us to be like a little baby. He expects us to be as a child, humble, innocent, and forgiving. Forgiving. Children have, if nothing else, very, very short memories. I find it interesting. I don't remember being 4 years old. I don't remember what happened a few weeks ago. That's part of the problem. When you're very, very young, you have a very short memory just because that's the way you are. You're a child. Things aren't that important with children, are they? They don't carry grudges for years. It's not until you get older, more mature, and wiser that you're able to figure out how to carry a grudge for 5, 10, or 20 years. As we get older, strangely enough, we have a debilitating disease that many of you have relatives that have been affected by, and that's Alzheimer's. They have no memory. So I think it's interesting that in some cases, God, at the end of their life, they have no memory. By the way, those people don't hate anyone, do they? They can't. They don't remember. And when they're little, they can't because they're little. They don't remember. But in the middle is where we have problems, isn't it? He asks us to be humble, innocent, and forgiving children, that we never go to step two. When you're offended, what does he mean to say? Yes, you can take witness. Go to your brother and take witnesses if he doesn't listen. Yes, if he doesn't listen to the witnesses, yes, you can go to the church. Make a big deal out of it so that everybody knows you've been offended. Everybody will know. But I don't believe that's what Jesus' intent was. It's kind of like looking at one part of a beautiful picture and focusing on this one part of the picture and ignoring all else that was painted. The rest of the painting says to forgive one another. Because indeed, if we don't forgive one another, we'll go to the torturers. I believe that that verse means exactly what it says. People that hold grudges are tortured. They are tortured, and they are tortured. And whether they go to the brother and don't get satisfaction, or sometimes they may take witnesses and go don't get satisfaction, or they go to the church and tell everyone and they don't get satisfaction, they are tortured. I know that when I've held a grudge, it doesn't help. People take medication that have those kinds of problems. They just can't forget. They can't forgive. But we should forgive, because all of us have, as it was stated in the first message, have been justified. I hope I haven't committed 60 million days worth of sins. I'd like to think I've only done one day of sin, but I know that's not the case. I'm somewhere in between, like all of you. But all of us, as this parable says so beautifully, and was given and it was exemplified in the message that we heard first by Mr. Hopkinson, we've all been forgiven. Some of us some very great things, and some of us more minor. But we have all in this room, all of us that have asked God and begged God to forgive us, have been forgiven. He therefore says, verse 35, "So my heavenly Father also will do to you if each of you from his heart does not forgive his brother his trespasses." He makes no qualification. He says, whatever has been done to you, whatever has been done to you, you should forgive and forget. Because I did the same thing for you, God said, through his Son. And so I have 3 points for you in conclusion. Number one, forgive. Number two, forgive. Number three, forgive as you have been forgiven.